The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.
Hello, guys. It's MMA fighter Chael Sonnen. Check out my podcast, You're Welcome, with Chael Sonnen every Wednesday and Friday right here at Podcast One. We cover the latest in mixed martial arts and everything else going on in the world of sport. Listen free to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen, exclusively available at PodcastOne.com and on the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and review.
Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo's here with Sam Monson. Hi, buddy.
You're awfully tetchy this morning, Steve.
I'm not. I'm excited.
Are you dealing with a lack of sleep due to...
I got 4 hours in a row last
night. Due to a newborn child?
4 hours in a row last night.
Yeah?
That was it. So a lot of times I'll get like two and then three and then two or something like that. Mm. But last night was just 1 4-hour interval.
You're pretty cranky this morning. That's all I'm saying.
A little bit. Hmm. It was rough. Like, I went to bed at about 11, and then the whole feeding thing took till about 2. So I didn't get to bed till about 2. And then Neil picked me up. He picked me up for work. I mean, that was like 7:30 in the morning. Just early.
Yeah.
It was just early. I'm all right, though. You're the cranky one. You were the one saying you wanted Eric.
Just
you guys had a good Monday podcast last week.
He would have been able to roll in here without all the whinging you would do it.
Everybody on YouTube thinks we hate each other.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this time they're not wrong.
Ouch. I thought you were my friend. You gave me a gift for the baby. That was nice of you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Those things are great. Easy for diaper changing.
They
little
really
gown,
are. Yeah.
Little gown thing. We should suggest it. We should get that. That'd be a great sponsor. Probably have a lot of people that have babies.
I don't even know what those things are called, let alone
like, get them on the pod to sponsor. All right, let's get into some stuff. NFL discussion, as we were just talking about before. What are we talking about here? It's February 18th,
right?
But free agency is right around the corner. Our boy Mike Renner just wrote a piece about the perfect landing spot for every free agent, per his mind. So we'll kind of say yay, nay, give our take. We'll go through that. We had another weekend of AAF. Action. Did you catch a little AAF this weekend?
I did. I watched some. I watched the Commanders, who was my like assigned team when we started drawing teams in the PFF offices.
They weren't assigned. We chose.
Well, okay. I chose them, but I chose them on the basis that Dalton Sturm was on the roster, and then they dumped him, and now they're kind of going with this Logan. They're going like a rotating quarterback group.
Woodside's good.
No, he's not, though.
He's
Logan
good.
Woodside. I can't remember who the second guy is. And then both of those guys are supposedly keeping the seat warm until whoever the third quarterback is. I don't know what's wrong with him, but eventually he's going to be starting. So I don't like the quarterback situation.
Wolford.
Right. And I don't like the fact that nobody in their secondary can cover. But their receivers are really good. So I'm torn. I don't know whether to jump back on the Commanders bandwagon or to hitch up to somebody else.
Why don't you just stick to one team like I did, the Arizona Hotshots? We're sitting there down 12-0 against Memphis.
Well, you weren't invested in the quarterback from the get-go.
I'm invested in the team. It's a team game. Rick Neuheisel, he's my head coach. And I'm a big John Wolford fan. He graded well for us over at Wake Forest. They're a fourth-quarter team. They made a nice fourth-quarter comeback against Memphis. It was the first road win for an AAF team by my AZ Hotshots, and we're now 2-0.
Yeah. I mean, it's easier to win on the road when you face a Christian Hackenberg-led team.
Oh, man. We, we can't completely pile on. All I'll say is when we have trashed Christian Hackenberg in the past, we've generally focused on his inaccuracy, right? Which is valid. He's one of the most inaccurate quarterbacks that we've seen come out of college, never mind draftable, like come out of college in the last few years. But his inaccuracy is like the third worst thing that he does as a quarterback.
So
his pocket presence was his decision, like everything was bad.
When I wrote the article way back when that said that he was completely undraftable for the NFL, the whole point of that article was that if you just focused on his accuracy, it was so bad that he was prohibitively incapable of playing at the next level, right? His accuracy alone would prohibit him from ever being a successful NFL quarterback. But even if you forgot the accuracy, all the other stuff was bad as well. There were literally no redeeming features of him as a quarterback prospect.
Yeah.
Therefore, he was undraftable.
His big arm isn't even that big.
Right.
Taking too many sacks. Pocket presence is atrocious. He checked down on 3rd-and-22 with like 30 seconds left in the game.
Now you go to the Alliance, and he still has no redeeming features as a quarterback prospect in a league where the standard is lower. So,
all right, I said we wouldn't pile on.
My favorite thing, just I'm not piling on. This is somebody on my Twitter that piled on, but he did it in a funny way, so I'm going to repeat it.
No, that's fine.
Somebody tweeted me that if it wasn't for gravity, Hackenberg would miss the ground. That's an outstanding.
Other people have caught on.
That's a great comment.
Yeah. Well, John Wolford continues to play well.
He's
good. You keep making the point. The guys that have played football well in the past are generally the guys that are playing well in the AAF. And just so we know, let's plug it real quick. We've got this as part of Premium Stats.
Yeah.
And if you guys have PFF Elite, you guys can keep tabs on the AAF. And I'm seeing names like Keith Reeser and Deron Smith on the defensive side of the ball. Demontre Moore, former Giants edge defender. Will Hill with Orlando
Will is unquestionably the most talented player in this league.
Yeah. He's just always had.
He's the one player in this league with legitimate NFL Pro Bowl ability.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody else can say that, and he's been pretty spectacular.
Trenton Thompson, playing for my Hotshots, coming out of Georgia. I kind of liked him in Georgia because he was a top recruit who just knew how to shed blocks and play the run. He just never stuck in the NFL. So just on the defensive side of the ball, just a lot of big names, or big names that we know, I should say.
Yeah,
who are playing well. But you guys can check out the full data, all the game grade breakdowns and all that stuff. And if you're into putting money on the games, there's a lot of good information over there. Charles Johnson tearing it up at wide receiver too.
Yeah.
Any other good John? So Wolford's a top graded QB so far.
I think so.
83.9 MVP.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's the MVP of the AAF so far.
Front runner for the player of the year that we'll be tracking all the way through the season.
We will be.
On the website.
So we've got content on the site. We've got the premium stats, grades and stats and all that fun stuff. So that should keep everybody busy if you guys have PFF Elite. Also keeping us busy is free agency.
Yeah.
So let's get into Mike Renner's piece. Wrote it on the site over at profootballfocus.com. Projecting landing spots for the NFL's top free agents. Now, this is tough. I mean, you've got one team out of 32 that you're picking for these guys, assuming, or out of 31, assuming that they don't go back to their current team. I didn't print that out that well.
No,
that was
didn't.
The front page, and I flipped. Just stick with it, though.
All right. Okay.
And we'll go through his list and hit on some of the big names and where they landed, shall we?
I was just curious where he put Le'Veon Bell, because I'm reliably informed that a couple of teams are just a Le'Veon Bell away from the Super Bowl.
Yes, that would be false.
Oh.
That would be false. An interesting place where he put him. We'll get to him when we get there.
Okay.
Because this is a take that Renner has been sticking with this entire offseason. I'll explain it when we get there. So let's start at the top. PFF's number one free agent is DeMarcus Lawrence of the Dallas Cowboys. Franchise tag aside, if he hits the open market, Mike had him going to the Indianapolis Colts because they have so much cap room. This will probably be a common theme. Everybody projecting big name players going to the Colts in free agency.
Right. This is like when we used to run that kind of free agent competition where it was just predict the landing spots of whatever. And whoever had the most cap room,
just put them for everybody.
Right, the top 25 people should all be going there because they're going to get a couple of them.
It's like you knew the Dolphins were going to overspend, the Redskins were going to overspend. You just put them for a bunch of teams. I think the Colts would be a good one. Schematically, what they're doing, playing a lot more zone behind a four-man rush, needing just consistent pass rushers off the edge. That's been a massive need in Indianapolis for a few years now, and DeMarcus Lawrence is the best one on the board.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. I think obviously returning to Dallas makes a lot of sense for them. He's become this talismanic figure up front, and they still need that guy, whether it's retaining him with the franchise tag or finding a way to commit him to the long-term deal. I think returning there makes a lot of sense. But yeah, the Colts have got the money to spend. They've got the need for a top-tier edge rusher, and he's probably the number one guy you would attack.
And then our number two free agent, Earl Thomas, the safety from the Seattle Seahawks. Mike has going to the Green Bay Packers. And I do think, you know, Earl's going to get projected to all of those classic Seattle cover three type teams, the 49ers, the Falcons, the Chargers. Again, cap space aside, just all of those teams that are running the same scheme. But he goes with the Packers, who did run a lot of single high. They ran middle of the field safety 61% of their snaps, as he writes in the article. They lost or traded Clinton Dix last year. This would be an interesting fit for the Packers.
Yeah, and also given how young that secondary is, like they're full of these players they've been drafting, particularly a corner, it kind of makes sense for them to get one aging veteran to tie it all together.
Get a general in the back end.
Right. So, I think it makes some sense.
And a guy who can turn the ball over, get the ball back to Aaron Rodgers.
Also helps.
Mike's just hopeful, I think, that he goes to the Green Bay Packers. Number three, Trey Flowers, the New England Patriots edge defender, who we raved about here last week. We got a lot of feedback on our little traditional scouting versus PFF scouting discussion, mostly positive, but of course, some people asking us for our biggest misses, perhaps something we can go back and go through our biggest hits and our biggest misses, some of the reasoning why. But Trey Flowers, the guy that we've been touting as one of our biggest hits through the years, he hits free agency as our number three free agent. And Mike projects him to the Tennessee Titans, with the Titans continuing their whole New England South rebuilding project. Yeah?
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know how much. I think Trey Flowers is really good, period. But the Patriots probably maximize his use. You know, they line him up all over the place. I think if you're going to get the best out of Trey Flowers, you need to move him around.
He's not like just a pure edge defender.
It doesn't make sense. It's not that he can't do it. It's just that I think he has more impact when you do move him around and do that kind of thing. Almost the same way this, you know, Michael Bennett was used for years, where he's fine if you just put him out on the edge. He'll be a good player, but he has a bigger impact or a more devastating impact when you do start to move him around and line him up inside and let him attack bigger, slower guards and centers in the middle. So I would want to see him land in a team that's prepared and eager to do that. I don't know if the Titans are that team.
So when you have, like the Patriots losing a lot of defensive coaches over the last couple of years, Matt Patricia to the Detroit Lions, Brian Flores down to the Miami Dolphins, those are the easy teams to also project to. Cap space aside, as far as interest goes, Lions need an edge rusher pretty badly. The Dolphins just need any kind of talent, though they're probably a couple of years away from truly revamping that roster to competing. So I don't know if they want to spend money on a Trey Flowers, but the Lions could be a team that just doesn't create pressure with their front four very well.
But with them, you've got to be questioning how much that is deliberate again, like the Patriots for years, that they're prepared to have guys that play contain more than they play edge rusher.
Yeah, but who better than Flowers? I mean, Flowers was by far the Patriots' best.
Right, but the question
rusher,
would
they're
be,
building the same system there.
Right, but the question would be, if you're going to do that, how much do you care who the guy is? Like when you can just install.
It's not easy and interchangeable, though. Like Trey Flowers played at a higher level than other Patriots' edges.
Right, but
over the
hardest point of doing that is, the hardest point in playing on the edge is rushing the passer and generating pressure. If that is secondary to just occupy the space, maintain, contain, and then push the pocket, like that becomes a way more replaceable position than the guy that needs to get speed edge rush.
Yeah, perhaps. Would be a lot of money for Flowers. But don't hate the fit for the Tennessee Titans there. The number four guy on our list, Brandon Graham, to the Los Angeles Rams. I didn't think of that one yet.
No.
So Ndamukong Suh's a free agent, so it's not like the same narrative of, okay, they're big, they're huge in the middle, but they need help off the edge. They still need help off the edge, but they're not loaded on the interior. But you're still talking about Aaron Donald and Brandon Graham. And if Brandon Graham's good at anything, Sam, it's just creating pressure and not sacks.
Yeah.
It's getting to the top of the pocket.
Have you learned your lesson now? Or are you still?
He's a 10-sack guy next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Depending on his landing spot, he's a 10-sack guy.
You want to re-up the bet for next year?
Probably.
Yeah?
Probably will.
Okay.
I'm gonna double down on Brandon Graham.
I'm just saying,
when you pressure the quarterback 55 to 70 times every year, you're going to stumble into 10 sacks more often than not. He has defied the odds.
Right.
He has defied the odds for the most of his career, having one double-digit sack season.
How has it cost you lunch and you still learn nothing?
That's just lunch. It's just lunch.
Okay.
We keep talking about it's just small sample sizes. It can't be like, well, I made this one mistake, therefore I won't make it again. It's like when you flip a coin and it lands at heads 10 straight times,
uh-huh.
The next one can still be tails.
Right,
doesn't matter.
This isn't the 50-50 proposition. This is a guy that consistently doesn't finish.
He's going to regress back to the mean with finished his sack totals next year. What are your thoughts on the fits of the Rams, though?
I don't hate that fit. Graham's good. He's a really good, consistent edge rusher who will generate a ton of pressure. And honestly, for the Rams in particular, that's probably all they need. They don't need the guy that's going to get sacks constantly, because even if you're just pressuring somebody, the amount of pressure Donald has on his own, A, you're going to get quite a few cleanup sacks from Donald wrecking the play and pushing a guy into you. B, if you can reverse that and you can get some pressure and force guys into Donald, that becomes a pretty devastating partnership.
I would say if you look back at the Rams, not that Sue was bad or anything like that, but if you had a choice between a good edge or say like a Sue next to Donald, I would absolutely take the edge, because Donald's going to win so many reps.
Right.
If you're at least keeping the quarterback at the top of the pocket, making him step up into Donald, you have a guy consistent off the edge, or you're pinching the line to double Aaron Donald, which happens quite a bit. You're getting those one-on-ones. I think it makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, that would be the one landing spot where I would think Graham might get 10 sacks.
Thank you.
Just because of the volume of pressure Aaron Donald gets.
We'll see what happens to Graham in free agency, and then we'll revisit whether or not. I mean, he's getting old too, so we might talk about like a fast food lunch, maybe not a full lunch. He's just getting old.
No, look, it's all or nothing here. But Donald had 65 hurries last season, 85 hurries or hits where there was no sack involved. So those are sort of 60 to 80 plays a season that are going to be heading in a position where Graham could potentially get a free sack.
Yeah, and maybe me getting a free lunch.
Yeah.
All right, our number five free agent, Grady Jarrett of the Atlanta Falcons. I like this fit. Let's think about this hypothetically here. Mike has him going to the Dallas Cowboys. So this is assuming DeMarcus Lawrence maybe isn't franchise tagged, or whether he is or not. What about Jarrett going to Dallas, where they've had some pretty big question marks as far as rushing the passer on the interior for a few years now?
Yeah, they've been trying to find a Grady Jarrett for a number of years.
I mean, they've had David Irving on and off steroids and on and off suspensions doing a pretty good job. But
right, and even David Irving is not really that kind
He's not
of
like
player.
Jarrett, no.
But they've, like, Malik Collins was supposed to be Grady Jarrett, essentially.
That hasn't worked out.
Right.
Well,
that's what they were trying to do with that move and a couple of other moves in that sort of time span. Yeah, this is another case where we've been trying to get this guy, or our version of this guy, for a number of years. Let's just get this guy.
Do you think the Falcons have to keep Grady Jarrett?
I mean, yeah.
I mean, it's a need.
As much as you ever have to keep one player, they really need to kind of keep him around.
How difficult is this for a team, do you think, when you go from the situation where Grady Jarrett is one of the most valuable players per dollar, say, in the NFL the last couple of years? He's on this rookie contract, fifth round contract, and then all of a sudden, just to keep the same production, you have to pay him like 10 times more.
Yeah.
Those are tough decisions to make. The Patriots with Trey Flowers, same thing. The Falcons with Grady Jarrett. You know, those are tough decisions to make here.
Right. But a lot of that has to be appreciating that you had him on a steal the first place. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, you're swinging from potentially, or swinging to potentially overpaying him, having been criminally underpaying him for the duration.
But that doesn't help you going forward.
No, it doesn't. But it's not. You're not going from a position where, well, he's getting paid what he should be now to, okay, now he's getting overpaid. You've been making out like a bandit for years. Now you finally, finally catches up to you.
All right, the next guy he's got going is Jadeveon Clowney going to the Raiders.
Yeah. I don't have any, I mean, this is kind of new still to the John Gruden era, so we've no idea really what his tendencies are, particularly now with Mike Mayock running the draft, or, you know, there's a lot of unknowns in how they actually treat personnel within that building, other than so far they've shipped all of it out. But Clowney feels to me like a John Gruden kind of player, you know?
Yeah.
You get caught up with the measurables and the highlights and the look at that play where he knocked the guy's helmet off against Michigan.
If if this got paired with the other thing that we're seeing the Raiders do quite a bit in offseason mock drafts, which is at number four taking Rashawn Gary from Michigan,
yeah.
who is Mr. Measurables. We've talked about this on the pod a few times. Mr. Measurables, not really Mr. Production. There's a lot of question marks with him producing at the next level. And Jadeveon Clowney is a very, very good player, but not an elite pass rusher. He's a very good run defender. He's never gotten after the quarterback at a high level. This would be one of those moves for the Raiders if they really wanted to revamp their pass rush by taking the number four pick and giving it, taking Gary and then putting all the money into Jadeveon Clowney, where they might not put a huge dent in their league worst pass rush,
yeah.
despite the high investment.
I mean, we may be doing them a huge disservice and they might not be like this at all, but the Raiders definitely feel like a team that would be all in on freaky athleticism and trying to teach him how to play. Now, Clowney's better than that, but he's still a way better athlete than he is a football player.
I'll say this as far as Mike Mayock. There's a few times throughout the years, he's made some mistakes throughout the years, obviously. He's got his whole draft board out there for everybody to see. But in the whole Khalil Mack, Jadeveon Clowney draft, where everybody had Clowney number one, I think Mayock made a late flip and made Khalil Mack his number one defensive player, which obviously, in hindsight, looks pretty smart right now. He would have taken Mack over Clowney, which was very against the grain at that time. Clowney was like the slam dunk number one pick.
His boards have always been this weird mix of like my evaluations versus what I hear going into the draft.
Right.
Like I'm not, you know what I mean? Like ours are very definitively, this is what we would do with no external influence.
Right. These are just the guys we think are the best players. And even a couple years ago with like Reuben Foster in his right. off-field, we just had to put him at the top of the board because we're focused on on-field.
At the other end of the scale, you've got a Mel Kuipers who is, this is 100% what I'm hearing from NFL people. Like, I'm not, my evaluation isn't really going into this.
But Kuiper's draft board is like a little bit of that.
The draft board is,
but
the mock drafts are like that. Whereas Mayock, you have this sort of weird cross of, you had this sort of weird cross of both of them, where it's like, this is kind of how I'm getting things started, my own evaluations, and then this is what I'm hearing moves things up or down.
He's made a few late moves just based off what he's hearing too.
Right. Like,
DJ Hayden, remember when DJ Hayden came out of nowhere to be the number 12, I think, overall pick to the Raiders?
Yeah.
That was like a week before the draft. Mayock's like, oh, by the way, DJ Hayden is my number one corner.
Right. So it's
out
like,
of nowhere.
What do you do with that? Is that a good thing because you therefore, you heard correct information and you had a source that said the Raiders are going to take him high? Or do you say, you idiot, DJ Hayden was a terrible player and he busted, you're a moron?
Well, I think if you're creating a draft board, it should be who the best players are.
Right.
He seemed to have made a draft board. He did the same thing with Chandler Jones. Like a week before the draft was like, boom, he's my number three defensive end. Nobody had Chandler Jones going in the first round. And then he goes in the first round to the Patriots. You don't need to build a draft board to reflect the first round to make yourself look good. That would be my take on that. I think
this is why I don't really understand this whole world of mock drafts and this kind of stuff. It seems like you should only be getting judged off a draft board, which should be your own evaluation.
Just projecting how well the player
will work. If you're using outside influence to determine where people go in your draft board, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Or at least,
I agree.
Even if you're doing it that way, you shouldn't be getting credit for where that player is positioned on your final board because you didn't do it.
Like, well, it was like when he was tipped about the picks on NFL Network and it was like, I think this next one might be Khalil Mack. Oh, wait, it's Khalil Mack.
Yeah. That was the tipping picks. Is bad.
Like Tony Romo. Tipping plays. But Romo, maybe
imagine
Romo
if he was just using a live feed, this 10 seconds ahead of everyone.
He was in on Belichick's headset.
Right. It's like the AAF thing with the app. Like yeah. It kind of bounces around time-wise, and there are times where you can actually watch the play happen and then predict run pass.
Anyway.
Imagine if that was just Romo. He was watching live, and then the feed is 20 seconds afterwards.
He paid Belichick to get right to his right into his headset. This next one's interesting, Sam. Landon Collins, the Giants' safety, going to the Bengals, and I'm going to quote Mike Renner, how does Landon Collins, linebacker, sound? That may even be his best position and would immediately transform Cincinnati's linebacking core. Cincinnati with one of the worst coverage linebacker situations in the NFL for a few years now, and Mike has stood by this notion that Collins, I mean, we all agree he's a great box player, like, you know, playing close to the line of scrimmage, but actually moving him to linebacker is something I haven't really thought of. I'm not saying I would do it, but this is what he does here with the Bengals.
So how about this for an existential question? What is the difference now between a box safety only and either a dime linebacker or just a weak side linebacker, period.
Well, I think, so like in Collins' case, I don't think you want to make him a true linebacker because the best stuff that he does is play, say, quarters safety. So first off, if you're talking about in dime, and he did this at Alabama, he would cover the slot. I think early in his career, he would be the dime linebacker. So he'd actually play linebacker. I think the difference is more, what do you want this guy's skill set to be? I don't want him playing safety in the box is different from playing linebacker in the box. So when you're playing linebacker in the box, you're in between the tackles. You're much more likely in the run game to have to take on guards and get blocked. Whereas the safety, as the eighth man in the box, the Cam Chancellor role in cover one and cover three, you're most of the time going to be unblocked, and you're the fill player, and you're just going to have some unblocked opportunities. Most safeties you want in that role rather than having them have to take on blocks.
So that's the issue, is that it's that you are likely to be unblocked. So I think the thing that Collins does best is actually torpedo run plays from the backside, where he gets to hang around the line, basically time the snap and catch the running back before the running back gets a chance to pick his hole,
right,
and progress on the other side of the play. So the running back, let's say it's a handoff going to the right, the back takes it, it's outside zone, he's being patient in that Le'Veon Bell style, waiting for a gap to open up, and then he hits it. All the while, Collins is sprinting from the backside, catching him from behind.
Getting down the line.
Because he's not sprinting to the front side, otherwise he'd overrun the play.
Right.
Now you change that. You turn him from a safety to a linebacker. Now he's lined up off the line. He's inside, and he's going to have to work his way through actual human bodies to make the same play. He can't just chase it down from the backside, because he'd be opening up a gap inside to do that. So, I mean, there are very real differences between this addition box safety and playing straight linebacker. And as much as body types, they're basically the same guy now, a 220-pound strong safety.
But it is a different skill set.
Linebackers are 220 pounds these days. So you're not talking about, you know, back in the day, you were talking about a guy needing to add 20 pounds of muscle to play that position. You're not anymore, but what they're asked to do is very different.
So I agree there, and I also think, you know, the Bengals don't have a defensive coordinator right now, so we don't really know what scheme they're going to run.
Right.
But the old Bengals scheme that was very too high centric, where they had two high safeties, they'd run cover two, cover four, cover six. So essentially, at worst, you're playing a half field deep coverage responsibility, which Landon Collins can do. He has enough range to do that. If you have him as a single high role, no good. No bueno. He's not Earl Thomas, not even close. But then the quarters role is the one I really like, where essentially you're playing about 8 yards depth. You're going to take any vertical receiver your way. So you're kind of like reading it, and if he runs a deep enough route, you cover him one-on-one. Landon can do that. But more importantly, if you don't have that vertical receiver, you're either helping out with another deep route or you're working downhill to the line of scrimmage. In the run game, you're working downhill to the line of scrimmage. You're essentially like a box player. You have a box player type of read, but also with some deep responsibility, if that makes sense to our listeners. That was where Landon Collins would really shine in that Giants role. So he would be perfect for the old Bengal system that they've run the last couple of years, which was zone heavy, too high heavy. I don't know what they're going to run.
Right.
And I certainly don't. I'm not ready to move him to linebacker. I like him in this too high safety role.
I asked you this before we came on, but I think it's important to get it on the air, so because this could be an important opportunity for you. How much money would it take for you to leave PFF right now and become the Bengals DC next year?
I think I initially told you $500,000.
Right. But then you went down
cheap.
To 400.
I'd go down to 400 because I live right down the road.
Right.
I don't have to.
You don't have to move.
I'm willing to sacrifice the 100K. I live about 12 minutes from the stadium.
Right.
Right. My commute would be the same. PFF and the stadium.
And look,
pretty much
PFF. PFF is, you know, it's, we've got a history of people coming into PFF, working, getting themselves going, and then going back to the NFL. Now you wouldn't be going back to the NFL, but you'd be stepping in.
Yeah,
I'm just saying. Zach Taylor, he's looking for the right guy. That's what he said. It's not.
I'm
know,
older than Zach. I mean, I'm like his.
Well, look, that's never been a problem. Wade Phillips is older than.
No. I'm saying,
Sean
like, he
McVay.
Should look up to me. He
right.
Should respect me. Respect
so,
my.
So, you know, don't.
Zach must listen to the podcast.
Yeah, right. Zach's listening to the podcast. He's trying to think of who the right guy could be. He's looking at the college ranks. He's thinking outside the box to a degree, right? Think a little bit further. Steve Palazzolo is here, willing to do the job for $400,000. He doesn't need relocation money. He's willing to drive to the stadium. More or less every day.
More or less.
Right.
And weekends are tough.
He could be your defensive coordinator.
I'm willing to do it. I could call some plays. call some plays.
Right. So there we go.
And I would sign Landon Collins, and I would keep him at safety. And what else I would do, I would draft all sorts of coverage linebackers.
Are you going to get draft kind of responsibilities?
Well, yeah. They would need my input.
Okay.
Who's going to run my scheme?
Right.
I'm a big, I'm a 2-4-6 guy.
I was going to say, what is your scheme?
Yeah, so I'm a 2-4-6 guy. We were talking about this on Twitter. We had, who jumped in? I don't know, some former NFL DB. I can't remember. We follow each other on Twitter. I just can't remember who it is.
Okay.
I would be a 2-4-6 guy. So cover 2.
Right.
Cover 4, cover 6. So you're essentially working out of this 2-high shell, and you can morph between two-man.
When you're initially saying that, I was thinking like formation. I was like, you're running a 12-man defense. That's going
to
be...
No, I'm starting with my coverage shells. I'm not going to go to the...
No, yeah.
Because in my first press conference... Because
2-4-6 would probably work quite well. It's just that you would be running 12-man on the field every play.
Oh, we should have my first press conference.
Now?
Yeah.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. You got to get the job first.
Well,
you got to pitch.
Sell people on.
No,
sell people.
You're
on
selling
it.
People now. So 2-4-6. Right. Cover 2-4-6. You're the cover 2, the quarters, the cover quarter half.
Quarter half. Exactly. So essentially you can almost have the same look at all times and then morph in between both.
Viking style, Mike Zimmer kind
of defense. Yeah, exactly how Mike Zimmer runs it. There's a history there in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And the thing that makes it difficult for quarterbacks is it just clouds their reads, right? You think you've got this great look against cover 2, but oh, boom, it's quarters.
Yep.
There's a guy there. You think you have quarters, and then it's cover 2. There's a big trap defense. The teams used to run this against Jason Witten all the time because he ran 2 routes the whole time, so you could kind of trick them.
Right.
You could trick them into running the out right into a corner. So you run a little trap. It gives you good run fits. But I would also teach my guys, play the pass first, run second.
Uh-huh.
We're gonna slow play the run. We're going to take away that middle of the field pass. What do you think of that, Bengals fans? We're going to take away the middle of the field pass that has killed you the last few years.
Are you going to have an aggressive or a passive defense?
So this is where I wanted to have the press conference. We're going to be aggressive.
Aggressive.
I believe in dictating the action. Okay. We will dictate to the offense. We don't react.
This is great. This is like a full interview.
We dictate.
Who's your leader on the field going to be? Who's your linchpin for this new defense?
William Jackson.
William Jackson? You're going to have a cornerback be your
Yes.
defensive system leader?
Because of his swagger and his ability to shut down one side of the field.
Wow.
Right? Everybody's going to follow him.
But that cornerbacks aren't usually the guys that like get everyone lined up. And who's going to be your green dot?
I think it's going to be Devin White when we draft him 11th overall.
Wow. Straight into the action as the defensive green dot guy.
Well, we'll see what he does his combine
interview.
There's
got to be like a term for that. There's no way they're called the defensive green dot guy.
Green dot guy. Let me check my roster again. I'm going to get the most out of Geno Atkins.
Yeah,
we've got Carl Lawson coming off of injury.
Yeah,
and I think we're just gonna let him loose off the edge.
This is good. I'm liking it.
Where's the rest of my roster here?
This is actually perfect because when you go to be the Bengals defensive coordinator, Eric can come into this chair and like full time.
Well, then we're all happy,
right?
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
You've got your perfect partner.
This is outstanding. This is a good day's work.
Clayton Fejdalen might see some more snaps because he was an 88.9 last year on 160. This will be my interview. What would you do with the defense? Well, Clayton Fejdalen,
looking at the PFF grades, I would move this guy to starter.
He had an 88.9 on 167 snaps.
And this
therefore,
guy to the bench.
You got to play him more often.
Yeah.
Ryan Glass, go.
There you go.
See, it's in my head now. I don't know what the right way to do it is because we've been back.
No,
Glasgow.
You had all the right pronunciation there. You probably just shouldn't leave a 5-second pause between the first.
Well, I was thinking, is it Glasgow or Glasgow? Yeah. Then you have Jesse Bates, and when we evaluated Jesse Bates last year, I said, "Man, this guy when he plays quarters makes some of the most spectacular plays you'll see from a safety." Because most safeties, when they're in quarters, they sometimes have to face a slot receiver,
right?
And they've just got no shot.
See, I think Jesse Bates could be your Harrison Smith.
Bates is a baller. He's my Harrison Smith.
Right.
Right.
Instead, you're giving the green dot to Devin White.
I don't want a safety. Here's the thing. I don't want a safety green dot guy, and I need a linebacker. Every mock draft has Devin White going to the Bengals. I'm not going to be making the draft decisions. I'm assuming we're getting Devin White, and he's my linebacker, and he's my speed guy, and he's going to be taken over.
All right. This is all sorted. I mean, we've mapped out Zach's next couple of months for him.
All right. Let's see what else we would do. Andrew Billings, 632 snaps last year. We'll continue to put a little bit more on his plate. Try to develop his pass rush moves.
Okay. Seems reasonable.
Yeah, that's what we're going to try to do. We need a little push.
What are you going to do at your second cornerback position outside of William, who's obviously spectacular?
You can only hide Dre Kirkpatrick for so long.
This is what I'm saying.
We're gonna go heavy in the draft and free agency.
We're going to look to the market.
I'm going to push our draft people to draft two or three corners in the middle rounds.
What about diving in a free agency at cornerback?
You just pointed to Ronald Darby.
Right.
I would love Ronald Darby for my scheme.
Yeah.
I think he'd be a good fit for my scheme.
Okay.
I also want to be able to morph into man when I need to. Cover one when I need to. Cover two man when I need to.
Well, now you're getting
so we're going to be
ambitious.
We're going to be multiple.
Yeah.
We're going to be multiple.
Multiple and aggressive.
We're going to be aggressive, multiple. You haven't asked me if we're running a 4-3 or a 3-4 yet.
I don't care.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Right.
It doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
That's why when I said 2-4-6, you were like, oh, that must be formation. I'm like, no. We're starting with our covered shell and working our way back.
I'm a little bit disappointed that wasn't your formation because I like the idea of we plan to run a 12-man defense.
So we might run into the 2-4-5 at some point.
Yeah.
With Atkins and Billings as the two D tackles,
right.
And then just get those two edges with stand-up edge rolls. Maybe we trade up to get Josh Allen. He could be my hybrid linebacker, and you don't know what we're in.
No.
We could be in 2-4-6. It would feel like we're playing with 12 guys.
Right.
That's the type of defense we're going to run. Okay?
Uh-huh.
When we played, so my high school basketball team, we ran this hectic, full-court, man scheme defense that we doubled like, all the time. So as soon as the ball is inbound, they're like, boom, we're doubling. Like, it's just madness. So when teams would practice against us, they would have their JV team, because you practice against your JV team, they'd have them have eight guys on the court on defense to prepare for the North Reading High School Hornets. That's how they would prepare for us.
Hmm.
That's what teams are going to have to do to prepare for my Cincinnati Bengals defense.
Okay.
They're going to throw 12 to 14 guys out on D, because it's going to feel like we've got guys all over the place.
So I've never been in an official, NFL coordinator interview when they're hiring these guys. But if I was you going into what will presumably come off the back of this, I'd leave out that story.
I don't think that helps.
I'd cut it. I think it's
the basketball analogy doesn't work.
I don't think it's helping.
Should I stick to baseball analogies only?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily bring in other sports.
As a former professional player.
Yes, if you're going to,
I can connect with the players.
I would run it by people first.
We'll do a few more mock interviews.
Yeah.
All right, so that's what I would do with the Cincinnati Bengals. Only $400,000 for my services.
Right.
And also, here's the best part: my PFF contract is up.
Right. This is
in about a month.
Neil's been treating it as if this is no big thing.
He
thinks there's no other offers on the table.
He doesn't even realize
we're going to get one here.
I'm going to get a salary bump. He better franchise me. So if Neil wants to protect me, he has a few more weeks to franchise me.
Right.
Lock me in for a year.
1 year guaranteed deal.
For millions.
Guaranteed.
Which is, by the way, one of the worst deals. So I'm not even going to get into it. The franchise tag, we won't get into the franchise tag thing that you ran into on Twitter.
No, don't.
But anyway, Neil, you have a chance to franchise me.
1 year guaranteed money.
To keep me away
from
this Bengals job.
Right.
Because this is my dream job. This is my hometown team.
Down the road.
Right? 12 minutes from my house. Uh-huh. 11 if I'm, good traffic
really
day. If I get the minivan really hauling.
The minivan down the interstate.
When the minivan's hauling, 11 minutes to Paul Brown Stadium. Zach Taylor, hit me up.
That was good.
Once they see the minivan roll into the stadium parking lot, you're going to have the job right there. I don't think you need I say more. Gents, if you put a Bengals sticker on one of the windows and they just see that roll into the parking lot, you don't even need to do the interview at that point. Job's yours.
I gotta say, I don't always love your ideas, but I feel like you're pushing me down the right path here.
Anyway, free agents.
All right, so back to free agency. We've got Frank Clark going to the Cleveland Browns, my division rival here. This is what Mike said, Frank Clark to pair with Myles Garrett. This would be kind of a dream scenario, I think, for the Browns, because you have Larry Ogunjobi in the middle, and now you've got a pretty fierce front four.
You do.
Or at least three out of four.
Right. This makes a lot of sense, actually. The Browns are one of those teams that have enough money to spend to make this kind of impact. Frank Clark's young. He's got incredible ability. He's made some really big-time plays. He's another guy, a bit like Danelle Hunter, who feels like they may never quite get to as good as they look like they have the potential to. But because you have Myles Garrett there already, he doesn't need to. Like if he doesn't get any better at all, but he still maintains the ability to kind of wreck people every now and again, that's more than good enough for a complimentary number two pass rusher.
But you're explaining that from PFF terms, and I think people need to understand what that means, because Hunter has crazy sack totals the last few years. Clark has high sack totals the last few years.
But sack totals are a bad way of measuring pass rush.
Yeah, and their sack totals have been much higher than their PFF grade, would indicate the PFF grade is not only, it's more stable, but it's also, unless like half of your pressures turn into sacks, the PFF grade is more indicative of actual impact.
Right, it's just a better way of measuring how a guy actually rushed the passer. If a guy is rushing the passer 500 times in a season, you're telling me that the difference between a guy being good or bad is whether he had 10 or 15 sacks. Those five plays in 500 rushes, you're telling me those are actually an accurate reflection of which guy was better.
I'm not telling you that.
No, but people are. And that's before you even get to the idea that those five sacks might be entirely worthless plays in terms of what that guy actually did. Right? Maybe those five plays were him beating a guy immediately and making a really impactful sack. And then we can have a debate as to how much five plays that are sacks is actually worth over a season. Having said that, maybe those five sacks were he happened to be standing in front of a quarterback who was rolling out to his right and sacked himself. Or he was the closest guy to a quarterback running down a blind alley to the sideline who sacked himself by running out of bounds. Or somebody else makes a play up the middle and you happen to be standing there as the quarterback ran into you. Sack, right? These are all plays that any pass rusher could and should make. And you're trying to tell me those five plays.
They're all
the
weighed the same when it comes to sack totals.
Right, but they're not
weighed the same in PFF
grade. So the difference between that and PFF grade is we're actually quantifying every single one of those 500 pass rushes and telling you how much of an impact he made in terms of beating blockers and rushing the passer. So sacks are nice. That's what everybody's trying to do. Nobody will argue that the sack is the most valuable play on a play level, but not necessarily because of the guy that ended up with the sack. Right?
Right. He doesn't deserve full credit for it
right
all the time necessarily.
So that's what you're shooting for, but that is it's a terrible way of measuring how good a guy actually was rushing the passer.
So that would be a good fit for the Cleveland Browns, and that brings up an interesting discussion on the next prediction here, which is Dee Ford going to the Seattle Seahawks. Here's what would scare me about this. With the Seattle Seahawks, if they don't bring back Frank Clark, putting all their eggs into the Dee Ford basket, which is 1 year of production, his 3 year grades 63.6, 59.4, and then last year's 88.6, which is nice, but how much can you bank on that for next year going forward?
Right, that's what would terrify me. I think anything other than Dee Ford getting franchise tagged to me is crazy. Because
keep him motivated. It's like essentially like your chance to make it a prove it deal.
It's the DeMarcus Lawrence deal.
Yeah.
It's okay. You did it once. That was surprising. Show me you can do it again before I want to actually commit long term money to you. Now DeMarcus Lawrence did, and DeMarcus Lawrence I think had shown more before the 1 year crazy breakout than Dee Ford has.
Right.
Like Dee Ford has almost entirely shown nothing until this year. In a contract year. Now, call me a cynic, but I just want more guarantees than that before I'm going to throw giant money at you.
The franchise tag is essentially protection for a team against contract years. It's not what its initial intention is.
But that's what it is.
But it is how you use it, and that'd be a great way for the Chiefs to use it with Dee Ford. All right, any other... We don't have to hit each one of them. Let's jump down to Le'Veon Bell one.
Yeah.
Le'Veon Bell to the Baltimore Ravens.
Okay.
And Mike's... take this
like
entire offseason. Yeah, the logic is that, look, if you're going to build around Lamar Jackson...
If you're going to run the ball 900 times in a year, let's get a running back that can A, do that, and B, give more to the game than that.
And plus, you've got the great Gus Edwards sitting there, too, had a nice season. You just give him a break with Le'Veon Bell.
Right.
Good backup for Gus Edwards.
But the whole point is, the Ravens run the ball more than anybody else in the league, so you're going to need more than one guy. You're going to need a stable of ball carriers. And Le'Veon Bell is a guy that has... been the bell cow for another team. Plus, he's a devastating receiver, so he can give you these matchup problems.
On the other hand,
I like the move.
On the other hand, Le'Veon Bell is valuable because of what he does as a receiver.
Yes.
He's extremely valuable because of that. He's a good running back, but as a receiver, he's extremely valuable. So you'd actually rather him in a Steelers offense that uses him, a Patriots offense that uses him, an offense that uses the running back as a receiver, and the Ravens would not do that other than maybe... a few screens.
Yeah.
So you diminish a little bit of his value there.
I would kind of like to see him with the Houston Texans.
Le'Veon with the Houston Texans?
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't know why.
Why?
I mean, there's a few reasons, but
yes.
I think it's a nice fit. One, their offensive line is terrible, and he's, I think, been a reasonable player at working behind a bad offensive line in the past. Mm-hmm. He's one of the few players that I think is capable of making a line look better than it is, because of, you know, that patient running style that we talked about before is not simply being patient. It's actually maneuvering defensive players to help blockers, right? Like, he'll force a defensive player to peek in the wrong gap and then jump back into the other one, whereby his blocker gets a better shot than he had before where he was losing. So Le'Veon Bell can kind of manufacture gaps that wouldn't be there for most running backs,
right,
which you probably need to do if your offensive line sucks. Two, I would like the Texans to have a receiving option that is not Nuke Hopkins. Like, at some point, this idea of Watkins,
we've got
Watson
Will Fuller
to Hopkins is going to need something
coming off
else.
Injury.
Right, Fuller maybe, but I would like to see Le'Veon Bell there as a receiving weapon as well. So, plus you have the money to spend, which is the other thing.
Interesting fit. You hate the Texans. The Texans fans hate you, but
hate
that's a good
Texans.
Way to.
I'm just saying it can't be
them.
Quarterback to receiver, nothing else forever.
I appreciate your takes there. Here's one that stood out to me on this list: Jordan Hicks, the Philadelphia Eagles linebacker going to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, Hicks has battled injuries quite a bit, but when you talk about the Steelers, their inability to cover in the middle of the field, Ryan Shazier going through his injury a few years ago when he had started to turn things around and become that middle-of-the-field force, it's a major need for the Steelers. And Hicks, quietly one of the better coverage linebackers when he's healthy in the NFL.
Yeah. There's one more that I think is worth talking about.
QB?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nick Foles to the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean,
okay, so what would you do if you're the Jaguars? All right, you're the Jaguars. You're sitting there at number 7.
Draft a quarterback.
You would just draft a quarterback.
Yes.
Would you bring in Nick Foles insurance?
Actually, the first thing I would do if I was sitting there at number 7 is ask the question, how good is the best quarterback in this draft, and how sure are we that the next guy is a significant downgrade from him? So if I'm 7, right, we've already talked about 1, 2, and 3 probably don't need quarterbacks, right? So if you need to get to 3 or maybe 4 to secure yourself the number one quarterback in this draft. You're asking yourself, if you're 7, is there a Baker Mayfield in this draft? And how far is the drop-off between him and everybody else, right?
We would say that there's not.
Correct. Having said that, we would say that the gap from 1 to 2 is significant.
My issue with Kyler...
on the field.
Kyler is our number one quarterback.
Yes.
Dwayne Haskins is our number 2 quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
We have some question marks about Haskins based off the grading. He's only done it for 1 year. Kyler had good grading. He's only done it for 1 year. He comes with question marks of his own. Beyond the height thing, because of, you know, this whole, is he really dedicated to football and all these different things, like, he comes with far more questions than, say, Baker Mayfield or any of the quarterbacks last year, I think.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't want to say it like that. Only 1 year of really good production from Kyler. So right. All of our numbers are pointing to him being the guy, but I feel better about what we thought about Sam Darnold, I think, last year than
I'm
I
just
do
saying,
about Kyler.
You should be drafting a quarterback with your first-round pick, and the thing you should be doing right now is asking yourself the question of whether we should be looking to trade up to secure the number one quarterback in this draft.
What if you can't? What if it's now between, we think Kyler's number one?
Well, you can. It's just, how much do you want to do it?
So you want to sacrifice the rest of your roster to go get your guy.
Why is it the rest of your roster?
I don't know. The rest of your draft.
You're at number 7. How much do you need to give up to get to 3?
A lot. It's a significant move. It's going to be a hot commodity, those top 3.
What are your
thoughts on if they can't get Kyler, and Haskins is our number 2 quarterback, we think there's a drop-off there,
uh-huh,
and you're debating between Haskins at 7 and Nick Foles?
Well, that's the question you got to ask yourself.
I'd go Haskins, but...
Yes.
I would draft a QB.
We don't know what Haskins is, right? We have theories and we have educated guesses based on tape, but the college to NFL jump is always a big question mark. You can never be sure until it happens. You kind of know what Nick Foles is, right?
I think you don't
know what he is week to week, but you know what he is overall.
Yeah, week to week he's going to be what you don't know.
Right.
I think I'm of the mind, if I'm rebuilding a team, I'm not paying big money to Nick Foles, because I think ultimately he has a Flacco type of year as a full-time starter. As many question marks as that come with Kyler or Haskins, I would try to take one of those guys. Where I think it gets iffy is the Daniel Jones, Drew Locke, Will Greers of the world. I have more question marks about them But you also, I don't want to tie myself to Nick Foles or Teddy Bridgewater necessarily to long-term deals. If I can get Teddy on the cheap because people still don't have faith in him.
Also, by the way, the Jags don't have any money.
Well, tell Mike.
Like, I think
he's
they
just
have,
looking for good
I
fits.
Think they have the least cap room.
You can make money
in the NFL.
You can always make money.
I mean, sure, but you're going to need for a quarterback that just turned down a $20 million option. Like, you're going to have to make a lot of money.
All right, one last thing. Juwan James to the Houston Texans. In this whole creep back toward average on your offensive line?
Any offensive lineman.
Your Texans. Your Texans. I think we're going to have you interview for the Texans GM job.
Uh-huh.
So take my Bengals interview. We'll spin it to you. You interview for the Texans job. And we'll figure out what you... This could be a whole series. We should just do a whole series on this.
Yeah.
We just rebuild each team. What would we do?
Right.
Yeah. Good idea. Let's get on that. That was good, man. I can't wait to see my Bengals interview. Critique it. Sharpen it up a little bit.
Yeah.
I hope Neil listened to this one because my demands are out there.
Well, you only need two teams to have a bidding war, right? So,
well, don't forget the mystery team that I'm going to be interviewing with. They're involved.
Okay.
The mystery team is very much involved. I'm going to tell Rappaport to put that out there.
Are you acting as your own agent or how are you doing this?
I'm being advised by multiple people, but I will act as my own agent.
Okay.
Sherman
okay.
style.
Wow.
I take Risky. Advice. I've got my old baseball agent on the horn. You know, I've got just for the lawyer speak, you know.
Okay.
He can do that stuff.
All right.
I got Zach Robinson. He knows the ins and outs of the NFL and being a backup quarterback. I talk to him all the time. You know, talk to people. Marvin Lewis. He knows the Bengals inside and out. Call Marvin.
All right. That's fair
my
enough.
Sources. I'll act as my own agent. So my demands are on the table. I want to be if you franchise tag me, look. It's fine. I'll take the millions if I have to for a year.
It's guaranteed.
I mean, it is. It's guaranteed money.
Guaranteed money.
Keeps my options open for next year.
Right.
So we'll see what happens. Anything else this week, NFL-wise?
No.
All right. We'll have Renner back here on Thursday. We'll do some NFL draft stuff
probably.
With him, most likely, yeah. If he comes back.
Right.
Should we talk about where he is?
No.
We don't want to discuss it?
No.
I mean, it's openly out there on Instagram.
Just saying, anytime he leaves the building, there's a pretty good chance he'll never return. This is Renner we're talking about.
Okay. So we thought we were joking about Renner's not on assignment and all that stuff. Apparently he was. He was on assignment.
Yeah, legitimate.
Yeah.
Making but apparently he's going to be back.
Some side money.
Yeah.
I'll text him right now, make sure he's back. But assuming he's back, Thursday we'll discuss some draft. Let us know what you guys want us to talk about. But we'll hit up the usual draft news and the big stories. Sound good?
Yeah.
All right, Sam. It was a pleasure being back here with you on a Monday.
Absolutely.
Hope it lived up to your expectations post-Eric. But everybody, if you want your AAF data, go check out PFF Elite, PFF Premium Stats. We have all of that breakdown. And if you guys sign up for PFF Elite or Edge right now, the draft guide's coming out soon. The QB Annual is a part of it. It's kind of like the time to sign up right now. If you haven't done it, sign up right now. You get the full year of access. You get all the goodies that are coming up over the next couple months. Sound good?
Yep.
All right, cool. We're out. See you guys Thursday. Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.